This episode is sponsored by Podmatch. Imagine your favorite online dating app, but instead of using it for finding dates, you are booking podcast interviews. Podmatch is a software platform that automatically matches ideal podcast guests and hosts together to record high-quality podcast interviews. It doesn't matter if you want to host your own show or you would like to join someone else's show. Podmatch will find the ideal match for you to be a part of. You can message and book your matches without ever exchanging an email and use their built-in calendar integration so you can quickly finalize bookings without having to be involved. Podmatch has generated 45,636 interviews among their 14,241 members. Podmatch has also been featured by Business Insider, Yahoo Finance, and Forbes. So what are you waiting for? You can go to www.joinpodmatch.com/ragacy. I repeat again, www.joinpodmatch.com/ragacy. So we'll see you there and happy matching. As we all know, appearing on other people's podcasts can be a valuable opportunity for a variety of reasons, both personally and professionally. So, what should you do in order to guest on podcasts? Well, before we actually introduce our guest, I would like to introduce myself. My name is Rayson, and I'm your host for The Ragacy Show. And today, we are really honored to have invited this amazing lady. Her name is none other than Sarah Lose. Sarah is the founder and president of Favorite Daughter Media, a creative agency dedicated to help mission-driven businesses and entrepreneurs use their outside voice. By leveraging the connective power of storytelling, Sarah can help you transform your passion into a platform for thought leadership, position yourself as a subject matter expert, and reach an audience with a message that resonates. Well, without further ado, let's welcome Sarah into the podcast. Woohoo!
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, you're most welcome. I'm really excited to have you here as well. I mean, I've appeared on podcasts before, and I know that, you know, I've also been asking people to come on board on the podcast. But, well, after reading your profile, I was like, man, this lady has a lot to offer for our guests and our audience as well. So I was like, wow, this is amazing. So I'm really looking forward to actually have a great conversation with you about this topic. And how have you been, by the way?
Oh, I appreciate all of that. You're so kind. I've been really good. I'm really excited. This is something that I love talking about, and I could talk about it all day. So you're probably going to have to cut me off at some point. But no, I'm excited.
All right. And just wondering, where are you based at?
I'm right outside of Austin, Texas.
Ah, Austin, Texas. Well, it reminds me of, Stone Cold Steve Austin, if you watch wrestling. he's based in Texas as well. And so you've always been in Texas, or you?
No, I'm actually from New York, and I was there until I was 18, moved to Maryland for college, and I've been here for about 4 years now.
Okay, how do you find life in Austin, Texas? Is it very different from Maryland and New York?
It's definitely different. I moved down here for tacos, and I have not been disappointed. But I love living down here. I've been here for 4 years. I have my dog here, and I was trying to avoid winter, but we've been getting a couple freezes recently. So not my favorite, but I love it down here.
Nice. Okay, cool. Wow, I would love to go to Austin, Texas when the time comes. And have you been to Singapore, by the way?
No, I would love to, though. Maybe we can trade.
Yes, we can definitely trade. Okay, so Sarah, I understand that many of my local fellow entrepreneurs, podcasters, they don't know much about you. So can you share with the audience a little bit more about who you are and what you do?
Sure. I launched Favorite Daughter Media back in January, so co soon coming up on
Oh.
my anniversary. And I launched it because I had been on the production side of podcasts within the finance space for about 3 years. And I was seeing a lot of people trying to use podcasting to grow a business, but they weren't doing it in the best ways. They weren't doing it
Oh.
in a way that really led with a lot of value and gave the most for the show and created great content. They were using it kind of just as ads and as marketing. So I launched my company to
Right.
try to help people really leverage this type of media, but in a way that leads with that value and gives the most to the audience.
Oh, okay. Cool. Well, we're gonna talk more about that later on as well. Based on the questions that I've actually sent you. And yeah, I'd like to ask you, right, before we actually dive into the main focus of our interview, I would like to know you more. So can you share with us, like, how did you become an entrepreneur, and especially building, how did you actually start building your empire of your this favorite daughter media?
Yeah, so I was actually the director of marketing for a financial advising firm. And while I was with them, I was doing a lot of media production. I launched a financial literacy media company. So I was producing a podcast and publishing ebooks and writing for different outlets and just doing a lot of content creation. And I loved doing it so much, but there was this kind of dichotomy between what I was doing and having so much success with, and then being in the finance space. And being a financial professional is a very kind of strict role, and it didn't fit who I was. I was feeling very tied to being very polished and very professional, and I didn't feel like I could be
Okay.
myself. So I actually resigned last summer, at the end, and it went into effect at the end of last year. And I did it just to give myself permission to be me again. And I wanted to launch a company so that I could be myself and lead with my personality and my values and not be kind of pigeonholed to what I was expected to be as someone in finance. So I still work in the finance space. I do a lot with finance marketing and helping financial advisors grow their businesses. But I get to do it as myself now, and it has made all the difference for me. So it's been an amazing experience.
Nice. Well, so you've been in finance for how many years again?
I started in finance in 2020. And before
2020.
that,
Oh,
I was at an
okay.
ad agency, but one of my clients was actually the firm that I ended up working for. So I was doing financial work, at a marketing firm, and then I went full time into the company. So about 5 years total.
Okay, cool. Well, 5 years. Well, and well, this is I would say great opportunity for you to learn, and then after that you came out and then do your own stuff, which is Favorite Media, which is really interesting. I would say Favorite Daughter Media is a really up and coming in this industry for you to actually thrive, especially getting people on board podcasting, guesting and all, which we're gonna talk a lot about later on. But I would like to ask you, right, while you're building your business up, especially when you just started up with your media company, do you have a favorite failure of yours, and how has that failure or parent failure set you up for later success?
I really do. So, like I said, I'm from New York, but I lived in Maryland for 6 years. And
Right.
I quit my job, dropped everything, and moved to Texas just kind of on a whim. I wasn't happy and I wanted to find something better. And when I moved here, I had a job in place. So, everything was set. I was going to start a new life, start in a new city. And within 5 months, I lost my job. So I was living
Oh.
in this completely new place. I barely knew anybody and I was unemployed. And it was a wake-up call. It was very stressful at the time, but it ended up being a blessing because I was not happy at that job. It was very stressful for me. I was having a lot of anxiety. I was kind of trying to reach goals that other people had set for me that they didn't really understand. So I was being set up kind of to fail because the goals that they were setting did not match what I was doing. Mm. So of course I lose my job and I'm instantly panicking, but I ended up accepting a position that I had been offered for the last 2 years before. I'd been offered this job by a former client. So I ended up accepting it just out of desperation almost because I was a little lost and I never thought I'd work in finance, but it ended up being the best thing that I could have done and changed the trajectory of my career. I met so many amazing people. I learned a lot. I got accredited as a financial counselor, which has been really interesting. And okay, I can't imagine what would have happened if that didn't happen.
Okay. Wow. Nice. So how long did it take you to actually, to have this client asking you to work for him or her?
So they had offered me when I was working at the ad agency I was at in Maryland, the CEO of the company, they were my client, and he asked me to leave the firm, the agency I was at, and go work for him full time. And I turned it down, and I actually told the president of that company, just to be open and honest, just letting you know that this client offered me a position, and it was to be marketing manager. And she looked at me and said, why would he want you? You're just a copywriter. So that was a little bit of a blow and kind of set me up for a lot of imposter syndrome down the road. But that was another wake up call. It was like, okay, I'm not being seen for my potential here. And it's what led me eventually to quit my job and move. I was like, well, why am I keeping my life in Maryland when they don't appreciate what I'm capable of? So I quit, I moved down here. And then within 5 or 6 months of moving here, I accepted that position because I had lost my job here.
Yeah, I understand. Well, it must be really, really tough on you. I can't imagine myself, having to lose a job and then going down to another state, another town to restart my life again. Because probably I'm based in Singapore, so we don't have a town. We don't have another state. We are only one island. We are only one country in a sense. So yeah. So I believe anyone that's tuning in right now, they would have said that, man, this is amazing. And of course, it's your journey, like what Jeevan has mentioned, and he loved it. That you actually overcame this as well. And I would like to ask you, right, when you're building your when you're rebuilding yourself and even building your own business, I'm pretty sure you have met some mentors along the way. So can you share with us, like, what's the best piece of advice you've ever received from them?
So when you say mentor, I actually think back to one of my high school English teachers. And what she told me that I'll never forget is just to never stop learning. And I haven't. That is something that I think everybody needs to do, is just always be a student, whether you're actually in school, whether you're learning on your own, learning from experience. You will never know enough. And I've definitely have taken that to heart in my career, and I've gotten different certifications. I've gotten accreditations. I have letters after my name. And I just never want to stop learning, because the more that I'm able to learn, the more that I'm able to teach.
Yeah, I agree with you. The more you learn, the more you teach, and probably the more you earn as well, in a sense.
Also true. Don't hate that.
Right. Yeah, don't hate that. Don't hate that, because we need to actually earn a living and to enjoy our life as well, right? And I truly agree with you. And Singapore also have this concept for every Singaporean, and that is lifelong learning. So that, as we are growing, as we're aging over here, everyone has to learn something new daily so that we will not have dementia, we will not be, you know, going down the path of, oh, we are so depressed and we are thinking that we're going to die in a few more years in a sense. But when we are having that, oh, lifelong learning, continuous learning kind of attitude, it brings us a huge amount of experience with that learning as well, right?
So because let me turn that around then. What is something you learned recently that stuck with you?
Okay, it's really personal. Okay. I learned because I just went through a breakup. So I learned a lot through this breakup as well, that you got to man up, and you got to own your shit, and you got to learn from your mistakes, and never allow your family to come into the relationship or bring in other people to the relationship, because it will stir the pot even worse in a sense, unless if you are asking for advices and their advice are really somebody that you are looking up to in a sense, and they are somebody that are, I would say, not divorced, they are somebody that are still in a stable relationship with their partner in a sense. So this is something that I learned personally through experience, unfortunately to say that. Yeah.
Well, I mean, even a bad situation is a learning experience.
right. Well, yeah, like Jeff wrote there, never stop learning in a sense, right? Yeah. So yeah, I mean these are times where we got to learn from tough nuts to crack moment in a sense, right? So yeah, so this is something that I realized that, you know, people learn through books, can learn through YouTube nowadays, they can learn through ebooks, and the best learning experience will be our experiences in a sense.
Absolutely. Yeah,
right. So yeah, so this is what I truly believe in. So for those of you who are tuning in, if you have experiences, just learn from it, be it good or bad, rather than, you know, blaming it on others and things like that. You just learn from that experience and, you know, improve from there. And if you don't have this kind of experiences, then you can learn from people's experiences through, you know, their podcasts or through their books and things like that, that you can actually grow, and you can understand, oh, I shouldn't do this A, B, or C, I should do this and that instead, for example, right? So yeah. And Sarah, now to the main focus of our interview. Okay, I would like to ask you, right, you know, a lot of times many people, when they hear about appearing, oh my god, I'm so excited, I'm being invited to this server. So can you tell us, like, how do you really identify the right podcast to appear on as a guest?
Sure. There's a lot of things that you really want to look for. Some are obvious and some are a little less so. I would say the obvious ones are going to be the audience. So if you're going on a podcast specifically for a business, you want to grow your brand, grow yourself as a thought leader within an industry, you want to be talking to an audience that fits your audience. You want it to mimic the people you would normally be speaking to. So they have to have an interest in what you're talking about. They have to fit the profile of your ideal client. And that's kind of the obvious one. But you also have to think about things like the personality of the host. And if you haven't listened to the podcast and thought, okay, I could have a conversation with this person, you're not going to have a good conversation with them. So there's shows that I'll listen to that I think this is a great show, but this isn't someone that I would really be friends with. And it's not going to lead to an organic conversation. So that's something that I think everyone should really keep in mind, is make sure this is someone that you could just feel comfortable just having a conversation over coffee at a cafe one day. And because that's the kind of the vibe that you want to go for, even though it is virtual and sometimes a world away. So that is another one that I think is really important. But then also look at the past topics and the past guests. Because even if your topic is a really perfect fit for the show, if the host just had someone on that talked about something super similar, they're not going to bring you on because they just talked about it. They don't want to be that duplicative. So they're going to want to really space out the guests that they have that talk about similar topics. So yes, you might be a good fit for the show, but the timing might not be right.
So are you saying that if, let's say, for example, September, someone came on to talk about how you can be a great guest on a podcast, and then you are supposed to come on, for example, end of September. So instead of putting you in end of September, are you suggesting that this host should actually put you further up, probably in October, November, and then they say, okay, I think you are a good fit, but you can only come at that timing, for example, rather than the space out timing, it's too near, then it would be it wouldn't be nice for the previous guest, for example. Correct me if I'm wrong.
So that's going to depend on the host. And that's kind of their decision to make. Depending on the topic of the show, every conversation might be very similar and might be very similar topics. So in that case, it's not going to really make a difference. But for some shows, if they don't talk about the same topics every episode, or they have very different focuses of different episodes, in those cases, they will probably choose to not bring you on that close to another guest. So it's really going to depend on the opinion of the host, what they're looking for, and if they want to have a similar conversation twice. There's some shows that they talk about the same thing every episode, but they talk about it with different guests from different perspectives. So in cases like that, yeah, they would still probably bring you on. But if it's something that they don't have that one topic, they really are varied throughout the episodes, that host is less likely to want you to come on if they had that conversation recently.
Okay, understand. Yeah, totally agree with you on that. For myself, usually if, let's say, I have someone talking about digital marketing, then I wouldn't want them to be the other guest to talk about digital marketing. I would want different topic, and then probably I'll stretch out within 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and then after that, okay, then, and then we can talk about digital marketing in a different perspective or something like that again. So yeah, understand where you're coming from.
Yeah, and in cases like that, you can get around it but you have to be very specific in how you pitch. So if you did hear that they talked about this topic, say it was digital marketing, and they talked about digital marketing in an episode that came out 2 weeks ago, but they talked about a specific strategy within digital marketing. When you pitch, you're going to want to make sure that you're pitching a completely different strategy or a different viewpoint, something that stands out against that other topic, so it doesn't feel like I'm pitching you the same conversation you had. Because if the topic is broad enough and you can narrow it down to be very specific, then it's not going to feel like the same conversation.
Right. Okay, cool. So besides topics, right, what other strategies do you use to pitch yourself to podcast hosts effectively so that you can land that guesting spot?
Yeah, when you pitch, there's a mistake that I see a lot of people make, and I've made it myself back in the day, but people will pitch themselves and they'll pitch their expertise and they'll pitch, this is who I am. I wrote this book. I talk about this. But what they're not pitching is the value that they're going to bring to your show. So I were to pitch to you just saying, hi, I run Favorite Daughter Media and I guest on podcasts, that's not offering you any value. That's just basically introducing myself. But if I were to say, hi, I run Favorite Daughter Media and I can give your audience strategies for getting themselves booked on podcasts and using it to grow a business, that's me offering the value that I could give your audience. So you right. want to pitch what the host wants to give their audience, not just who you are. It's not about an introduction to yourself. It's not about you being an expert. It's about what you bring to the table.
Yes, I agree with you on that. And, you know, while you're speaking with me about that, I was like reading through what you sent to me on Podmatch. I was like looking at it. I was like, yep, got that right. Yes, yeah, you were actually sharing with me what you have to offer for my audience rather than introducing yourself as, hey, I'm Sarah Lose. Well, this is what I do. And then after that, I would like to appear on your podcast. But don't mind me reading your script for an example, all right? Okay, so for Sarah, what she sent to me was, hi there, I work with entrepreneurs to help them craft the stories to be impactful thought leaders. I would be happy to speak to your audience about ways they can grow as a thought leader or become better podcast guests to grow their business. And when I read that last sentence, I was like, I've not interviewed anyone who spoke about how you can be a podcast guest and how you can use podcast guesting to elevate your brand, for example, to let people know more about your brand and your services. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna get you on the podcast, and lo and behold, here we are.
It's proof that it works.
Yes, it works, guys. So you don't need to have a long ass pitch and copy and paste it and send it over to these individuals, this podcast host or whoever that you want to appear on. You just re-listen to what Sarah has sent to me and you can adjust it from there. And then probably, you know, it can be your one-hit wonder with the hosts themselves. And who knows, right? So you can let us know once you have actually tried that method out, all right? And okay, and I'd like to ask you, right, Sarah. So, what are the key benefits for individuals or businesses looking to be podcast guests?
There's so many, and for people mm-hmm. that are entrepreneurs or small business owners like myself, we don't have a giant marketing budget. We're trying to spread our message, spread our brand, reach audiences, but we can't spend a couple $1 million on a Super Bowl ad. Like, we don't have that budget behind us. But things like podcasting and podcast guesting, it is so inexpensive and it can be done. Right. If you do it well, it can reach so many people. So with like, if you want to guest on a podcast, there are ways that you can do it that are a little more expensive. You can hire people to help you pitch. You can hire people to pitch for you. You can hire coaches like myself that help you really craft that message. Or you can just send a DM to a host and say, hey, here's the value that I offer. So you can do it very inexpensively. And with podcasts, the reach is almost like limitless. Like right now, I'm talking to you from Singapore. And I'm in Texas. Like, that is a global reach right there. And it's amazing how far these messages can spread. So if you use it right and you do it the right way and you do it in a way that leads with value and highlights yourself as an expert and as a thought leader, people will listen to you and they'll trust you and then they'll want to go find out more about you and find out what you do and how they can work with you.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. But I would like to ask you, right, Sarah, if let's say, okay, I would like to appear on huge podcasts, like probably Lewis House podcast or, you know, Entrepreneurs on Fire, for example, things like that, right? How would you suggest the guests to pitch themselves?
Because it's funny because I got on Entrepreneurs on Fire.
Oh, nice. Okay,
not myself. I got my client on Entrepreneurs on Fire.
I see. Okay, okay.
And I don't recommend. Yeah, I don't recommend using the method that I used. For that one.
Why not?
So I was at a conference. It was called Podcast Movement, and it was 20.
Oh, Podcast Movement.
Yeah, I think it was 2021. Oh. And John Lee Dumas, who is the host of that show, was one of the keynotes. And he did a really great presentation about how to pitch to these really big shows. And he went through his whole kind of like a script of this is what you should include in your pitch. This is what you should say. And I learned a lot of what I do now. I actually did learn from him years ago. But at the end, he opened it up to questions. And I was in the front row. So I raised my hand and stood up and said, can we be on your podcast? And he was just like so taken aback, just like, did she really just do that to me? And he's like, okay, that was bold. Here's my email address. Send me your pitch. Tell me it was you. And we'll see if we can get you on. So I got he was at that time my boss. He's my former employer. And he was the host of the podcast I produced. And I got him on Entrepreneurs on Fire. Maybe don't. I mean, you could try to do it that way. It worked. But there are a few more conventional ways to go about it. But
such as
for some of it, it just comes down to how you approach them. And with podcasts, their websites will have their email address. So send them an email. And it just comes down to what you include in that pitch email. So making sure that you lead with what the value is that you're bringing and things that are very personal and grab the attention of the host. And it can be a little more difficult with those big shows because a lot of times they're going to have gatekeepers. So you send an email to the host. It's not actually going to the host. It's going to their VA or it's going to an assistant. It's going to a producer. It's going to someone that isn't the host of that show. So you have to be able to draw enough attention so that the person reading it thinks, okay, they would want to read this email and they will want to forward it on and have that conversation with the host themselves. One of the things that I actually learned from John Lee Dumas that day is write a review of their show. So if you write like a 5-star rating and a great review on, say, Apple Podcasts, you screenshot it and you include the screenshot in the email and say, I'm a huge fan of your show. I actually gave you guys a 5-star rating and a great review. I attached it to the email if you want to take a look. And because if you just leave them a rating or a review, they're not going to know it was you. So include that screenshot and let them see it. And the same way, like when you apply to jobs, you're supposed to actually edit your cover letter and your resume and everything per job. This is the same thing. Don't just have a canned response that you send to everybody. It has to be personal to that person. And I say that especially because I have gotten the pitch emails that say, insert show title here in brackets. Because they copied and pasted it and they didn't actually swap that for the name of the show. So if that's not the most obvious way to say, I haven't even looked at the show I'm pitching, I don't know what is. So as much as you can personalize it to the show, include why you want to be on the show, not just that you want to, but I'm a huge fan of the show and I love how you feel about this. I think we are in agreement on things like this, like whatever you can say to show, I actually know your show and I want to be on your show because I know the value that you offer your audience and I think I can add to that value.
I mean, if let's say you were to just copy and paste for every show and then just send it, then it won't be authentic. People can see how you're bluffing them. And once they sniff it, they smell it, they will definitely say, time out. I'm not going to be letting you come on my podcast, right?
Yeah.
And would you add in like your past experiences in, have appeared on other podcasts before, or you have appeared on other magazines, for example, Success or Forbes or whatsoever, would that give you more credibility and more higher chance to actually land that guest on the podcast?
It definitely can add credibility. I try to keep pitches on the shorter side because it's a lot to read. But if you make like a speaker one sheet that you can attach as like a PDF, and it has your headshot, your bio, and on that you can list some like past appearances that are a big deal. That's a good way to include that information and have that credibility without ending up sending like a 3-page email.
Okay. Wow. 3-page email sounds like it's gonna be
one's going to read it.
Yeah, very long ones for people to read, open inverted comma. And yes. I'd like to ask you, right, Sarah, what common mistakes do you see people make when they are trying to secure podcast guest spots?
I mean, a few of the things that I said with the pitching just their name and their experience instead of their value.
Oh, yes, right.
And mm-hmm. not personalizing it. But a lot of the mistakes that I see that are the memorable ones are the mistakes that people make during the recording and on the actual episodes. Are even worse. Like you did the pitch, you got on the show, mm-hmm. but you didn't do the show well. And with things like that, it's the people who treat the episode like an ad. That is the worst. This shouldn't be like an ad for your business. This shouldn't be an ad for your book. This should be you sharing information and sharing value and sharing stories. And working with you and hiring you should be kind of an afterthought. That you can bring that up in your call to action at the end, but you shouldn't be just pitching and sales pitching yourself throughout the episode. That is not valuable. Nobody wants to listen to that. No one's sitting here watching commercials. It's not what anybody wants. So avoiding doing that is the biggest thing. And I'm sure you've seen a podcast or listened to one that had an author on, and they basically answer questions like a politician. Every question is like, oh, well, you can read about that in the book. Like, yeah, no, that's in my book. So if you want to actually buy the book, you can read about that in chapter 2. Like, why are you on a podcast if you're not going to tell us what you talked about? Like, your book is going to be like 250, 300 pages. There's no way you can give us all of that information in 30 minutes. You can afford to give us some of it.
Yeah,
you don't have to avoid the questions.
Yeah, true. You can just give us snippets of it, like what we see in cinemas, right? Rather than, you know, being so mysterious about it. Hey, you want to...
Exactly.
There's a lot of jam there, but apparently it's just you ruining your own show in a sense.
Yeah, and with like an author, if you haven't given me any actual insight into what is in this book, and like if you haven't given me pieces of value that come out of that book, why would I want to buy the book? So you're doing yourself a disservice. So instead of saying, oh, it's in the book, you can say, oh, this is what I talk about. This is, I explain this, and this is how you do this. You can learn more about it in the book, but I'm still giving you enough that you can walk away feeling like you learned something and that there's an action that you can take to get towards the goal that they're trying to push in the book.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, well, so since we talk a lot about the mistakes, right? So is there a right way to guest on podcasting?
Yes, do exactly what I'm doing. No, I'm kidding. There definitely is a right way, in a sense. Do as I do. No, it's just focus on the value and think about, if you were the listener of this show, what would you want? And I didn't bring this up before, but one of the things I often include, it's not so much in the pitch, but once I get that yes and I get that invitation to be on the show, sometimes it's actually a pre-interview, and then we have a conversation first. One of the things I always ask is, how can I bring the most value to your show? Because the host knows what they're looking for. They know what their audience wants and what their audience needs. So if you just straight up ask, like, what can I do or what can I bring that's going to be the most impactful? First of all, they're going to love that question because it shows you truly care about making a great episode. But it's also going to give you some direction. So maybe they'll say to talk about this one specific piece of what you pitch instead of the whole thing. Or maybe they'll say, can you come with 3 really actionable steps? Like, whatever it is, ask them for it so that you can really nail the conversation. Because it's not just the host and their audience that's listening, it's other hosts. So if you want to come off as a really great guest, you want to do it every time so that other hosts see that and want to bring you on their show.
Okay. Understand. Yeah, I agree with you with that point where you want to actually not just be going there to, talk about your stuff, but you want to talk about value that you can provide for the audience. And once the value has been delivered, that's when you can actually share some more stuff about your products or services and things like that, rather than straight up go and pitch about your stuff and talk about, like what you said about the author, say, you can look at chapter 2 of my book and that's it, and things like that, right? So yeah. So I truly agree with you that we got to know what we can provide for the audience and what does the host expects from us, and also what does the audience expect from us as well when it comes to the value that we can provide on the podcast. Because I'm pretty sure that if we are just blindly sharing things or stuffs that we are selling, then audience, definitely the amount of them will drop. The host might even get bored or might even change the subject or make it even more awkward for both of you.
They're just not going to air the episode.
Right.
The amount of times I've had to say, sorry, there is a problem with the audio file or some other lie because I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings and say this was just not a good episode. Like, we do it. Producers do it all the time. Producers will just can an episode and say, this is not going out. And that really sucks for the show, because unless you're doing all of your own production, like, we're paying for this. Like, we pay the editors, we pay all of the people that go into the show, and it takes our time to do the recording. So we're losing money or time or both on an episode that's never going to go out because you just dropped the ball on it.
True. And just want to ask you, right, would you rather be paying to appear on a podcast, or would you rather be paid to appear on a podcast?
That's a good question. So I have never done either. I've never paid to be on a show, and I've never been paid to be on a show. I've been paid to speak at events and stuff, but never for a podcast. And I like to think of it as just trading value. I'm bringing my information and my stories, and you're bringing me your audience, and that's a fair trade. There are conversations and debates about whether hosts should charge a guest to be on their show. And I know people on both sides of the argument, and I know some people who are very vehemently just like, never charge to be on a podcast. Like, this is content. This isn't like they shouldn't be paying, but people pay to produce podcasts. Podcasts are expensive. And if you have a high reach, you have a really dedicated, strong audience, and you can prove that you're going to get some value out of being on this show, why not? Like, I don't think it's a big deal to charge. I did pay one time. I paid like a skip the line fee. So instead of having to wait 6 months for my episode to release, it released like the next month, and it was like $50. So I did that. But I know people who charge like $1,000 or more to be on their show, but they're paying to produce the show. It's very high quality, and they're giving you access to an audience. So it's almost like you're paying for ad space, but you're doing it in a way that is leading with entertainment and value. So I personally don't see a problem with it, as long as you can back up why there's this dollar value or more in it, and you'll see some kind of return. But I've just personally never done it. Not sure I ever will.
Okay, cool. Okay, so for those of you who are tuning in, if you want to start charging, you can give it a try. If you want to pay in order to appear on this big podcast, for example, it's up to you as well. Because I truly believe that sometimes you don't have to pay to appear, but it would be awesome if you can be paid to interview someone or to have someone on your to be on your podcast, and you get to interview them. Yeah, that would be fantastic. That would be definitely fantastic, which I believe many podcasters in US are doing it right now, right?
Yeah, and there's different business models. So I'm on the production side. I do host the podcast, but most of my focus is on the production side, and I actually launch branded podcasts. So I help small businesses create their podcasts in order to grow their business. And I know a lot of people who will launch a podcast and use it as ad space. So they make every single episode very, very much about the company that they're interviewing, and they talk about their services and their stories to the point that it almost is an ad, but done in a way that's very tasteful. And those companies pay to be on it because then they get all of that content. So they're giving them the files, the audio files, the video files. They're cutting it up into reels and TikToks and all of this different social media content. And they are also releasing it on their RSS feed as a podcast. But really what the company is paying for is all of that content. So it only makes sense that you would charge for that, because that's a high quality, high value product. You're putting like you have professional videographers, professional lighting, all of this stuff that's basically a commercial shoot. So to do that for free is ridiculous. Like, of course you would pay. So it really comes down to, is what you're offering a sellable product, or is it just, we're doing this we want to create content. We'll put you in front of our audience and do it that way. So it's just different business models, really.
Okay. Cool. Well, this is really, I would say, insightful, because for those of us who want to, start to monetize from podcasting, I think this is the way, which Sarah has actually mentioned earlier. Very interesting, unique way of selling your services for podcasting, in a sense. And I'd like to ask you, can you share with us a memorable or challenging experience you've had as a podcast guest, and what have you learned from it?
Oh my goodness. How much time do you have? I think the memorable or challenging ones, I have some that are memorable just because they were great and I really connected with the host and had a great conversation. They went too long. We had to remind ourselves to stop talking. But the ones that I really think about are some of my first appearances when I was so unprepared. And not unprepared as in like I just didn't care, I didn't research, I didn't do anything. I just didn't know what I was doing. And this was back when I worked in the finance industry. So I went on to talk about finance, which I knew about. I'm an accredited financial counselor. I know this stuff, but I wasn't as passionate about it. And I had just never done a podcast before. I'd only been on the production side. So I got myself on some really big podcasts and I almost regret it because I wish I would have gotten on those shows now when I have more value to share and I'm more comfortable and I'm like, I feel more eloquent when I speak. I know I'm not a perfect speaker. I'll never will be, but I am better than I was. Always be growing. But yeah. Those are the ones I remember. It's that this was a massive show, massive audience, and I don't feel proud of my performance on the show.
So that means it got aired still, right? They didn't tell you.
Okay. No, it wasn't that bad. It was not that bad. It's one of those things that I tell this to people that like whose shows I produce when we're launching a show and they record their first episode and they're embarrassed because this is the first time they've done something like this. It's the first time they've created this kind of content. And of course you're embarrassed. And if you don't look back in a year on what you put out now and you don't feel embarrassed, you haven't learned or grown enough. You haven't improved enough. So it's probably just in my head, honestly. It's probably I know how much better I am now and how much I've learned now that what I did 2-3 years ago is going to feel embarrassing to me. But that's kind of how I see it. So at this point, I have that understanding. So now I strive to be embarrassed. I want to be embarrassed in a year of what I'm putting out now. Because that just means that what I'm putting out a year from now is so much better. And there's articles that I've written that were published to like Forbes.com, which is a very high profile website. And at this point, I've written like over 100 articles that were on Forbes. But I look at the first ones and I'm like, they let me publish that? Because at the time I was like, this is a great article, but now I'm such a better writer because I've just been doing it for this many more years. And what I'm writing now is better. So it wasn't a bad article, but I could do it better now. So I think having that goal of I want to be embarrassed later, it just means your goal is to always improve and grow and learn.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's always about lifelong learning. If you don't make mistakes, then when will you make it, right? In a sense.
Yeah.
So like what T. Harv Eker always said, every master was once a disaster. So if you are a disaster and, you know, being a guest on the podcast right now, you're okay. You're fine because there are other people who are doing it way worse than you in a sense. But of course, we are not telling you to just, oh, there are people who are worse than me, so I'm going to just stick with who I am right now. But it means that, oh, I can learn from them so that I don't do those shit like them, but I am doing something better than who I've seen and who I've seen and who I've heard or who I can be in a sense. So, yeah, I believe
it. Yeah, and when it comes to failure, I mean, I strive to fail big. And like some people fear, I mean, of course I fear failure as much as anybody else, but there are some just small failures that like, okay, this is a setback. This is like, I learned from this, but it's the big ones, the ones where you're just kind of skidding in on two wheels and just let's see where this goes. Those are the ones that you learn so much from. So it's almost like don't waste your time and your energy and don't worry about those just small little bumps in the road. Really focus on the big failures, the big mistakes, because you will learn so much that day.
Right. I agree with you. And well, you know, Sarah, I really enjoyed our time together. And, you know, as we are coming to the end of the podcast, we have one last question for you. Okay. One last. Okay. So, Sarah, imagine this. You suddenly lose everything, your money, your reputation, your assets. So what will you do from day one to day 30?
This is going to sound really lame, but day one, I'm going to call my dad. I think that's kind of, I'm 28 years old and I'm still anything that goes wrong, anything, and like anytime, I'm just like, my dad can fix this. So yeah. I'd call my dad and kind of just go from there. I mean, I do feel like I said, I'm 28. I'm still just kind of getting started. So if I were to lose everything today, how much do I really have to lose? As long as I still have my dog, I still have my family, and I still have the skills and the lessons that I've learned in these past 28 years, I think I'll be okay.
Right. Wow. I mean, this is something I would say, because if let's say you are in Singapore, then probably some of us will not think this way. Some will think like, oh shit, this is the end, man. I mean, like some will even like you know, go back to their cave and cry and you know, and not want to do anything and start blaming themselves. But for you, it's totally different. I mean, you, of course, you will weep, you will call your dad, talk to him, and after that, come back up stronger, in a sense. So,
and I mean, I feel blessed to be able to give that answer, because not everyone would give it, but also not everyone could give it. So I have safety nets, and I told you how a couple years ago I moved to Texas and I immediately lost my job. And of course, the first thing I did was call my parents, and I'm in a panic and I'm crying. And one of the first things that they said, other than berating the company and how awful they are, was, let us know if you need rent money. And every single time to this day, when I talk to my grandmother, she's like, are you okay on money? Are you going to make your mortgage payment? Do you need me to send you anything? Are your bills okay? And every time I'm like, Grandma, I'm doing great. Like, my company's doing well. I'm thriving. Everything is great. And she's like, okay, well, just in case, I'm going to send you a little something. So I'm so lucky to have that, whether I necessarily need it or not. So I really wouldn't be that worried. I mean, it would suck. I don't want to do it. I don't want to lose everything, but if that were to happen, I would be okay. I have people to fall back on and people who would help push me back to where I came.
Okay. Wow. That's awesome. So do you have like anything that you want to tell your dad, your parents, and your grandma, for example? And probably you can let them listen to this episode.
Ignore what I just said. Totally send me money. send it all. It's fine.
Oh, okay. Daddy, grandma, please send more money to Austin, Texas.
No, my family knows that I love them and I'm so grateful for them. I named my company Favorite Dog, not even because I feel like I'm the favorite daughter. I just, the relationship I have with my parents is, it means so much to me. It's my favorite relationship. So it was a homage to them more so than to me.
Ah, nice. And just out of curiosity, I know this is not part of the plan, part of the podcast questions that I've sent to you. You know, when you said about this, your company name, right? Favorite Daughter Media. When you register it as a company, Did anyone ask you anything about the name?
Oh, to this day, I get questions every day. And the most common question is, huh, that's funny. You're like the only daughter? And I have to say, no, I have a sister. I meant what I said. Favorite daughter. Because they assume it's like a joke. Like, oh, yeah, you're my favorite kid when they're an only child. Like, I have a sister. She's not the biggest fan of my company name. But again, it wasn't actually about me. It was more of honoring my parents and how much they mean to me.
Okay. Wow. Awesome. Okay, cool.
They love her too.
Of course. They love your sister too. And your company as well. Company name, yes. Especially.
they think it's hilarious.
Yeah. When I read it, I was like, did I see something wrongly or something? But then I was like, oh, it is true. It is. And I went to your website. I was like, okay, yes, this is legit.
it's memorable. Someone... It's a conversation starter. It fits my personality. I personally love it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I mean, I also love it too. I mean, it's as cheesy as it sounds. It's really, really interesting way of letting people remember your company's name as well.
Yeah.
In a sense. Well, Sarah, can you share with the audience where they can find you on social media or even your website so they can actually check out for your services, and if they need it, they can actually go for it?
Of course. So thank you for that. My company's Favorite Daughter Media. So my website is favoritedaughtermedia.com. You can find all of my social links, and I actually have a tab that says free stuff. So I have a couple free resources on building a brand or creating lead magnets for appearances like this. So check that page out, download some free stuff. We all love free stuff. And feel free to reach out whenever. I'd love to talk to some people.
Okay, Ken. Awesome, awesome. So for those of you who are tuning in, thank you so much for, being here. And also at the same time, if you want to know more about Sarah, you can go to the captions and you can actually check her out on her social media, which is also in the captions as well. And with that, I'd like to thank Sarah for your golden nuggets that you have dropped inside this podcast. Really amazing, really practical. We really love it. And also at the same time, I'd like to thank all of you for tuning in right now, be it through Spotify, iTunes, and all the major podcast platforms, or even Facebook, LinkedIn, or even YouTube. You guys, we really love you. And stay tuned for the next episode for The Regacy Show. All right? With that, take good care of yourself and see ya. Bye-bye. Thank you, everyone, for listening to another episode of The Regacy Show. I hope it has enlightened you. I hope it has brought you to an epiphany where you realize that this is where you want to go and this is what you want to do. So I hope you will continue to support and also at the same time like, comment, and share this episode out to your people, to your family, your friends. And not forgetting that we have just created a Telegram group. It's called The Regacy Show Family. So you can go and check it out and let us know how you find this group is serving you. All right. So with that, I would like to thank you once again. See you and stay tuned for another episode of The Regacy Show.